Hey, true believers, it's that time you've been waiting for. Gather around your iPod, radio, or whatever you're listening to, for Mitch and John are about to go into the power cosmic. Sit back and listen to comic books, toys, movies, and more with those two guys that've got nothing better to do but talk about the stuff that you love. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wake the neighbors, phone the kids. It's time for the Power Cosmic Podcast. Hey everybody, it's your old pal Mitch Halleck. Welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast fueled by what Galactus farts out his ass after he eats a whole planet. That's right, the Power Cosmic. Now let's not get crazy here. I couldn't do this show by myself, though I have thought about it. If it wasn't for the man of the hour, the man with the power, you know him, you love him, the Duke of Paducah, the master of disaster, the Anyway, direct from the Raynham Flea Market all the way up in Massachusetts, boots number A89-90, two boots full of pure comic nostalgia toys, you name it. The one and only, the writer of Backstreet Magazine, or Backs Issue Magazine, the Kirby Collector, and the alter ego, John Cimino!
What was going on at Backstreet Magazine? I never thought you read that.
Backstreet is the Bruce Springsteen magazine. I used to have a subscription, and I have several letters that are in that magazine.
Horrible. Oh, hey, what's up, everybody?
Well, John, I'll tell you what's up. We're just, the season of giving is on us. Last week we had our holiday gift guide. Everyone's just getting into it. What about you, man?
Yeah, the holiday season is upon us, and if anybody wants to make it down to the Raynham Flea Market in Raynham, Massachusetts, we're open Saturdays and Sundays, 2 days for all December, and on the 10th and 11th, I have my good friend Joe St. Pierre, artist of Spider-Man, Deadpool, Batman, all that good stuff, and his own creation, the new Zodiac. He'll be appearing there on the 10th and 11th of that weekend of December. Come down, see us. He'll be selling sketches, all his swag, and I'll be there, and we'll be talking comics. And as Mitch, as you've seen, my booth is bigger and badder than ever before. It looks like Wonderland, does it not?
Oh, God, yeah. And if folks haven't gone to the Raynham Flea Market, and why aren't you going there, you could go to John's Facebook page, Saturday Morning Collectibles on Facebook, and you could see up-to-the-minute photos of John's latest booth and some of the finds he has. Didn't you come across the great Galoo, John?
Yeah, it's the great Garloo, Mitchell. Yeah, I just picked one up from 1961, the great Garloo. What makes that toy so interesting is it was the first big monster toy ever. It predates, obviously, the Marvel heroes, but it came out at the time when Ray Harryhausen was making all those movies in the 50s, in the late 50s. It was the atomic age was going on. And the great Garloo is this big green creature that it's motorized and it walks and it picks up things. And what made it so interesting, too, it's that there's no copyright on that, where it was just a homegrown big creature that it didn't copy off anything other than something like it had the influences off those Ray Harryhausen movies. But it was also put into effect that it was Howard Stern's favorite toy ever, and he could never get that. And he talked about it a lot on the Howard Stern show.
Well, I have heard him talk about that. But, John, I don't want to go into this whole great Gaboo, Gazoo, Gadoo, whatever with you right now.
Cause Garloo. And just really quickly, it was based off that 20 Million Miles to Earth movie by Ray Harryhausen. It was that creature that got so big. It's kind of based on that. Kind of.
Okay. Well, John, as always, I throw a topic at you, and I hope the listeners, all three of them, really enjoy hearing what we have to say about it. And I'm going to throw something out to you, because I know you're a huge fan of this, but I'm pretty much of a novice. I don't really know much about this. And today's subject is going to be wrestling, okay?
Wow.
I don't know what it is about wrestling and comic books, but I'm going to say, literally, I don't know much about it. I know Hulk Hogan. I know Mr. T. I remember some of the names when I was a kid, Jimmy Superfly, Snookum, things like that. But I have to ask you, John, What is it about wrestling and comic books that are symbiotic? They go hand in hand. And you, I know, are a huge wrestling fan, as your friend Roger is as well. But let's go back. Can you tell me where the tie-in and the connection between wrestling and comic books began, John?
Well, first off, wrestling was always about larger-than-life characters, caricatures. But it wasn't until, I got to throw this out there, the golden age of wrestling is the decade between 1982 to 1992. That is considered the greatest period. And it is, because that was the rock and wrestling connection when MTV and the WWF hooked up and they did all these series. It got into a national spotlight. It got out of the cult into national. That was when Hulk Hogan was first in the Sports Illustrated. He was the first wrestler ever to be featured on the cover of Sports Illustrated, which was a big deal at the time. Commercials, all that. But why I think it's so symbiotic with comic books, if you go back to that time period, and as I was saying, larger-than-life characters, you had these characters that, like, they looked like superheroes. And then, you know, obviously they say these incredible things, and then they perform these incredible maneuvers in the ring and being on cartoons. It was just literally having these charismatic characters come to life. And so you've had Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal. Animal was just at your at the Terrific Con this past year, was he not, Mitch?
Yes, he was, and the year before that was
Ted DiBiase was at your
the Million Dollar Man, yeah, and the year before that was Jerry Lawler too.
Jerry Lawler, but see, the thing is that those guys that play those characters like Hulk Hogan, they say these crazy things and larger than life things, and kids couldn't help but relate to them. But let's not also forget, the WWF was always showing their episodes and stuff after Saturday morning cartoons, so you could watch Wrestling Challenge or whatever it may be on at 12 o'clock, right after all the cartoons. So they're kind of associated with that. And let's not forget, Hulk Hogan was when I was a kid, always looking at the Hulk Hogan names. I don't know if you know this, but they gave the copyright to Marvel Comics because he used Hulk in his name. And so for some reason, I would always see Titan Sports uses Hulk Hogan, and our likenesses are a trademark of the Marvel Comics group. And I used to notice that as a kid. That, I don't know if you know that, Mitch, but
I did not know that, John. I had no idea.
But then that kind of went away because they were saying, like, why would... you know, how did Hulk Hogan and Hulk, kind of, just because it was the name, but it wasn't like the Incredible Hulk. So, but seeing that too, I'm sure people associated comics and wrestling together. And just to throw out Hulk at you, Hulk Hogan actually took the name Hulk Hogan. He was called at the time, he was Terry Bollea, and he had a bunch of different names. I think he was Flex Lavender or something at that time. But he went to a station where Lou Ferrigno was at, and Lou Ferrigno was currently doing the Hulk television series. And he saw him. He said Lou was about 265 at that time. And when they saw Hulk Hogan, it was like in Kentucky or something. And they were saying, like, Jesus, you're bigger than the Hulk. You're bigger than... Kind of like that name Hulk stuck, and then Hulk, he kind of evolved into Hulk Hogan at that time. So obviously that had a lot to do with it. But, like I said, Mitch, these characters were larger than life. They were like superheroes come. Big muscles, and, fighting good and bad, it was all there.
Well, one of the things, too, I remember as a kid, Spider-Man's first fight, if you want to say that, was when he became bitten by the radioactive spider, and then to try to make some quick money, he got in the ring, and as a kid, it was Crusher Hogan who was the wrestler there. So maybe that Hogan name, and later on with the Hulk Hogan, maybe there was some type of connection there, or am I just grasping?
There's another thing you don't know. In a Superman comic book in the 50s, Antonio Rocco was an old 50s aerobatic wrestler. From I think he was from Greece, or he was Romanian. I might be wrong about that, but he appeared in a Superman comic, and he helped Superman. This was during the 50s. I think it was like in 56 or something. He actually appeared in, and he helped Superman solve a crime and stuff. So he was in an entire issue of Superman.
Oh, what was that term you used? An aerobiotic? What does that mean?
No, acrobatic.
Oh, acrobatic! I thought you said something else for a minute. I was like, so he was like,
he was an acrobatic. He was very, very popular in the 50s, and he was in an entire comic of Superman during the 50s.
Now, again, going back to the 80s, and this ties into toys. Hulk Hogan was that breakthrough character. Now, not only was he on TV, he was in the movies. He was in Rocky III, along with another person who came into the world of wrestling and pop culture, Mr. T, who played Clubber Lang. And the two of them also did a tag team match, I remember that, as part of WrestleMania, correct?
Yeah. Sylvester Stallone was always a big fan of wrestlers. I don't know if you know this, but in the late 70s, he did a movie, I think it was called like Something in Paradise.
Paradise Alley, Paradise Alley.
Oh, yeah, might be Paradise Alley. It was in the late 70s, but Terry Funk was in there, a famous wrestler. And then, when he did Rocky III, a few years later, obviously he wanted Hulk Hogan, because Hogan had the size and all that, and he was called Thunderlips in that. But at that moment, Hulkamania was, Hulk Hogan was in the AWA at that time, and Hulkamania was kind of permeating. It was getting out there. But after Rocky III and Thunderlips, it just exploded, and that was 83. So you've got to start the decade starts of the golden age of wrestling was 82, when Hulkamania was starting to come, and then after 83, and it peaked 85, and then 86, 87. It just exploded. And then it kind of got, after 1992, we started ushering in, after The Undertaker comes, it starts ushering in the Attitude Era, where things got a little more sexy and a lot more raunchy, and it just never went back. So that Golden Age was that comic book era of these, you know, the Road Warriors were the first guys to put the makeup on. And they used those makeup as, like, almost like, you know, to symbolize who they were. And then, I don't know if you remember, culture took precedence in that, too. I mean, like, a lot of other wrestlers started wearing makeup, like the Ultimate Warrior and Sting and all these other Road Warrior ripoffs. But you could look at video games and you could look at all this stuff that was coming out. Even comic book characters, they started having that look of the wrestlers. And I don't know if you know this, Mitch, but in a Marvel Comics Presents, a Hulk vs. Hulk, and Herb Trimpe actually drew it, but the Hulk Hogan, they call him the Incredible Hulk. They don't say Hogan, but they call him the Incredible Hulk, and he looks just like Hulk Hogan. He's in the ring, and he starts screaming about he wants to take on anybody, he'll beat anybody, and of course, Mr. Fix-It, the Grey Hulk, shows up and beats the crap out of him. So it was actually Hulk versus Hulk. It was a funny issue.
I never saw that. And plus, there was the big toy phenomenon with LJN, correct? They made a huge, huge, big dent in the toy industry with those wrestling figures, right?
Yes, absolutely. LJN. But see, you got to also think about the target audience of what Vince McMahon and the WWF and that they were looking for were all those comic readers. They were kids by the age of 5 and 15. That was their target audience. So that's, and it did, and they attacked them. Also, there was the NWA, these other wrestling organizations down south that were a little more serious. But as the WWF was getting so big and more cartoony, they started jumping on that bandwagon too, because that's where it was, you know? I mean, that's what it was at. But that was the target audience, the kids. And, Mitch, one more thing, wrestling magazines. If you ever read wrestling magazines during that era, which I have a ton of them, like they were fake, like fake stories of wrestling, but they were like comics. They would say the titles and all that stuff would be like, you know, like the night Hulkamania trampled Big John Studd, or you know, whatever. They would have like Bruiser Brody, Mercenary of Mayhem, like the Road Warriors invite you to their smorgasbord of violence. It was all kind of had those comic-y Stan Lee isms, believe it or not, and that's it all kind of meshed well together.
Well, then we also, over in the DC world, we had Bane, who was a, how do you say, Louis Lucha, what's the term for the wrestlers with the masks on from Mexico?
Oh, the luchadors, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that was something that they brought into it. They brought this character in. I don't know why they chose that look. I never asked Graham Nolan, who's been at the shows twice already, why they came up with it. That's a good question. Maybe I'll shoot him an email.
Because, for instance, Bane is Mexican, correct?
Yes, he is. He is. But he was really scrawny. And then they injected him with that venom.
Yeah, and the Mexican wrestler, the Luchadors, comes out of Mexico. And the most famous Mexican wrestler of all time was Mil Máscaras. He was in the AWA in the late 70s and early 80s. And so, I mean, he wrestled for, there was movies and everything. So the Luchadors have that type of superhero look. And Mil Máscaras, which meant the man of a thousand masks, he was another aerial guy. He had a nice physique and all that. I mean, he was huge. So they looked like superheroes too. And there's no doubt that wrestlers kind of emulated comic characters and vice versa, especially during the 80s.
Well, that's interesting, though. I was going to say, has there ever been a character that was once a wrestler, maybe bitten by a radioactive barbell and becomes a superhero? Has there ever been one?
I'm sure there's... I don't know if you ever remember those toys. They were called Muscle. They were like these little...
Oh, yeah, I remember those. Yeah, yeah, Muscles.
Okay, those were Kanuka Man. I'm saying that wrong. But they were... They were Japanese, and they were all wrestlers, and they were, like, in these comic books, too. And then they made a ton of these... I think they're called Kanuka Man, a Kanachi Man. You know, obviously I'm not pronouncing it right. But Muscle Man was the leader of that. But they were all in comic books, too, over in... they were all anime characters. And, like... So there was always a connection between wrestling and comic books. And just to go, for instance, the Japanese was huge into wrestling, but they loved American wrestlers, the big, crazy American wrestlers like Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody. But one of the all-time biggest wrestlers to ever go over there was the Road Warriors. Because think about it. They had the spikes. They had this makeup. They were larger than life. They were so... Them, Hulk Hogan, and Ric Flair are the biggest legends of that American, the Gaiji is what they called them, that wrestled in, that wrestled from America, that wrestled there. And they had comic books. If you look at a lot of animated comic books at that time, anime stuff, there's a lot of Road Warrior knockoffs, there's a lot of Hulk Hogan knockoffs, and there's a lot of Ric Flair knockoffs. So once again, they go hand in hand.
And then, of course, in the movies, when we had the Spider-Man movie come about, we had Macho Man, who played Buzzsaw, was the name of the character.
Yeah, Randy Savage. I mean, it was perfect.
Randy Savage, that's right, yeah. And then one of the greatest movies ever made, according to you, was They Live, which is a superhero type of movie starring, of course, Rowdy Piper, correct?
Yep, and it's in the Guinness Book of World Records with the longest fight scene in cinema history.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you watch that fight between... Piper and the other guy, I mean, it goes on forever. It's so crazy.
He was a fixture at the Big Apple comic shows in New York, the ones that put on by Mike Carbo. I've seen Rowdy. He was always there. He had his kilt on. One of the nicest movie actors, rock stars, whatever you want to call, whatever that celebrity is, that gentleman was one of the nicest people to ever walk the earth. I used to watch him. I wasn't a wrestling fan, but I used to watch him interact with fans, kids. He would stop everything to talk to a kid if he was in a wheelchair or whatever. He, you know, 20, 30 minutes with them, photographs, whatever. One of the nicest human beings I've ever seen in my life at a con.
And you want to know something about Roddy Piper? The funny thing is, he's the most hated villain of all time. Him, he was the hated, and Hulk Hogan was the greatest hero. So, obviously, you can't have a good hero without a good villain. And as good, shows you how good of actors they were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was definitely all about acting and such. And like I said, to me, I guess that's the closest we could ever come to a real superhero. Physically, you know, massive steroids, whatever they were on, gigantic guys. And like you said, they're scripted and they're acting it out like a television show or a comic book. I guess maybe that's what the huge appeal was for the kids at the time, right?
Well, yeah, of course. Bigger than life physiques, bigger than life personalities. Those are exactly what the superheroes were. You know, kids would look at their comic books and, like, you know, they try to envision being like Captain America or Luke Cage or whoever, the Incredible Hulk or the Thing, with these big Superman, with these big physiques. And then they look on TV, and there's those living and breathing guys that are just as colorful, like the Ultimate Warrior. I mean, the guy looked like a god with the makeup, the long hair, yeah, and all that. Who wouldn't? And screaming about, like, the heavens are going to come down and crush you and stuff, calling on these warriors. It was perfect.
Well, even some of the character names. I've heard terms like the Legion of Doom, which comes right off the Super Friends. There's a villain named Vader, which I always think of Darth Vader, right?
Of course. Big Van Vader. I mean, there's so many. Even with Jerry Lawler, he was a huge comic fan before he ever even got into wrestling, and he was an artist. And he always would go to the stations, and I know he was at your show, which you said earlier,
yeah,
but he would go to the wrestling stations in Memphis, and he would ask wrestlers to draw them, and that's how he got into the business. But he was always a huge, huge comic book fan.
And yeah, in fact, he works for another guy that we know, Mike Kingston, and they do a book called Headlocked.
Yeah, I know Mike very well. Mike has been into the trenches like with us, me and Keith, since 2006, 2007 he started his stuff, and he's still doing it.
Oh, yeah, he must be at about 30 shows a year. He's every weekend he's at a different convention. Wrestling, comic books, you name it, he's there.
And he deserves all the success because he's been doing it like forever. And I remember like when he had his little, just doing the little Headlock comic, and you know, and he kept pushing it, and it worked because why? Comic books and wrestling, it's just a cohesive thing, especially at that time.
Now,
to me, not so much.
What I was just going to say, besides the movies, the TV, the comic books, and the toys, one of the other huge things with wrestling was video games. And call me crazy, but aren't you one of the owners of, what is the video game you have? Super Smash Wrestling?
Yes, I sent you a picture right when I got it, the WrestleFest arcade game. That was something I always wanted. And Road Warrior, at your show, you know, I was there with Roger and Road Warrior Animal, and he signed it for my daughter. He signed the headboard, and he signed Road Warrior Animal, and he did a promo for my daughter. And that was a big treat. But yes, I've always wanted that wrestling, that wrestling arcade game, WrestleFest, which is considered the greatest wrestling game ever. And if you play it, even to this day, it's so much fun, and it's like these comic characters coming to life. I mean, that's basically what it is.
Is that one of those games you can play up to four people?
Yeah, I got four people. And Mitch, I wouldn't even charge you. I have the 25 cents deposit thing there, but you know what? I wouldn't even charge you. You could come in, press as many credits as you want, and bada boom.
Oh, John, I swear, you're one hell of a human being. I hope the fans out there appreciate your generosity as I do. Now, sir, it is going to be a quick... We're moving at lightning speed this week, because like I said, it's a very busy time for everybody around here. We barely got this episode out, but, you know, we know the fans out there. The Power Cosmic has to channel itself through us one way or the other. John, if you were a wrestler, what would your name be?
I did have a wrestler. Now, back in that day, like during that golden age of wrestling, you have to remember, I mean, you were a little older, so you were probably not into it as much.
Yeah, John, when I was young, they wrestled dinosaurs. That's how old I am.
Yeah, I can imagine. But when I was young, it was hitting. Like, I was the perfect age. I think I was like 12 years old. And Hulk Hogan and the Road Warriors and all this stuff. I even went to, I'll tell you a little story I did with the Road Warriors with my friend Brian, because we would always bring mattresses outside his house and my house, and like, you know, on the weekends, and we would stick the poles in the ground, and we'd tie these ropes around, and we'd have wrestling matches. All the kids would come up, all the kids in the neighborhood, we'd have wrestling matches, and obviously I'd be the Road Warriors. But one day, me and Brian are getting so into it that we actually ran to our middle school. We broke into the school. We broke into the locker rooms, and we both stole the football pads, two football pads from the football team. We ran back to his house, spray painted them black, and bought these big, huge economy size nails, and we shoved them through the shoulder pad so we could be the Road Warriors. And we invited people over. And we shaved our heads. That's another big
well,
thing.
Yeah. I mean, you had to have that.
No, yeah, but I mean, that's how crazy we were for this stuff. But I did have a wrestler, and my wrestler was called Don Bradley, the High Voltage Man. The High Voltage Man, Don Bradley. Yeah, we called him Mr. Electricity sometimes, and he did his U-Tep two-step dropkick. Yep, I did have that. That was my wrestler.
That was your wrestler. But if you yourself was a wrestler, what would your name be?
If not me myself was a wrestler. Oh, and Mitch, before I answer that, I got to tell you this little quick story of backyard wrestling became a big thing during the 90s, you know. But me and my friend Al, who I grew up with, and we were in college. We were going to a community college together, right? And I would just take classes, he would. But anyways, we took this speech class. And in the speech class, we had to do a project, like a video. You had to do a video of how to perform something safely. So whatever. But we decided to do how to perform wrestling maneuvers in your backyard safely. So we did these incredible stunts. Now, this predates, like, backyard wrestling and all this stuff. It was so funny what we did. It ended off, like, me jumping off his deck onto him, giving a Randy Savage elbow smash. But it was so funny to the class that the teacher actually asked us so she could use it and so she could show, like, you know, other people's, you know, the next semester's classes. And she stole it from us. She promised she would give it back to us, and she never did. She actually stole the tape from us. And I remember walking into class the next, whatever, into one of the dorms the next semester, and a kid came up to me, and he goes, "Hey, are you the guy that did that wrestling tape? The 20 was in the backyard?" And I was like, "Yeah, that was me." He goes, "That was awesome. I saw that." She actually stole it from us. I'll never get it again. I don't know why, but that was a big deal. So, yeah, so if I was a wrestler, my name would be, I don't know. What do you think, Mitch? What would your name be?
Oh, I would just go with Crusher.
Crusher? No, there was already a Crusher.
No,
Crusher.
The reason why is because when I was a kid in the 70s, late 70s, I would write a comic book in the back of the classroom instead of doing my studies. And I also had a friend named Al, and I think I've mentioned this before. We would write our own comic strips on loose leaf paper, one page, maybe two-sided sometimes if it was an epic story. And we would just write them and draw them and hand them back and forth to each other. His character was called Mr. Smith, which was just a stick figure thing. He couldn't draw very well. And I was more of the John Romita of the class, so I would draw fantastic. And the stories were always a little, you know, typos and misspellings, but they looked great. Okay, I was the Jack Kirby of the comics in the classroom, all right? And he was more of the Stan Lee with a more exotic, bizarre imagination. So my character was called Crusher, and he was basically he looked like your thumb. He looked like a big toe. Slanted eyes, couldn't see much, had one tooth because he was so fat. He had that brow like Ben Grimm had that just overhung his eyes. It was just a big roll of fat over his eyebrows. And he would fight the masked Marvel. Siegfried. Siegfried was the bad guy because he had that German name because he was like a Nazi. So Crusher and Siegfried would fight each other. And they were just simple wrestlers, but they would get involved with saving the universe and the world domination. It was amazing how two little wrestler guys became the saviors of the galaxy. I wish I had those. I wrote 400 issues of those, 400 sheets of paper. I remember super spectacular. I mean, my friend Al has them all. I saw him years ago. He became a post office worker, and he said he still had his whole collection, and he wanted to know if I had his, and he wanted to swap. But unfortunately, when you get to be like a teenager and you're moving out, you throw things away, and I threw out my collection of the Mr. Smith comic book that he had written, and I should have saved it. But it was that. So, yeah, my name would be Crusher, long story short. I could still draw them today if I wanted to come back and do Crusher comics. It would be there.
Crusher, yeah, but there would probably be a copyright infringement because, like I said, there was Crusher and the Bruiser out of the 60s. They were a big...
You know who my guy looked like? Did you ever see the movie... The Wongs or something was that?
What?
The Wongs? Hollywood Nights. I can't remember this movie. It was in the late 70s. It was about a bunch of street gangs. Hollywood Nights? I can't remember. Karen Allen might have been. You don't know this movie I'm talking about, do you?
No, but explain it.
And there's this guy. He was also in this movie called Stir Crazy with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor.
I remember Stir Crazy.
He was the massive fat guy with a bald head. That's who I modeled this character after. And he must have been about 300 or 400 pounds, that guy. And he just looked like, I don't know, like a big blob of flesh come to life. And that was who Crusher was based on. And there was a movie, I'm going to say Hollywood Nights, and there's a line in it where he's with this street gang called the Wongs, W-O-N-G. And the one line he says is, "Don't F with the Wongs." And we would just laugh about that in class. So it's neither here nor there, but it's one of those things when you're 13 years old and somebody would walk into the classroom and scream, "Don't fuck with the Wongs." Everyone would just laugh their head off. So.
Oh, my God.
I know. This one went everywhere this week. It's actually 31. I didn't think we'd get to 30 minutes, but we did. Somehow, we've been channeled and generated and exaggerated and energized with the power cosmic. So, John, as always, we're going to say goodbye. Got to say anything to anybody?
What you going to do when Hulkamania comes rumbling through?
All right, and let's get ready to say, and that's that.
That's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.